Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to CRE Radio. Our show today is Tenant Relocation and Alternative Strategies with our guest, Alan Buchanan. Later on in the show, we have invited Simon Walker, and Simon will be talking quite a lot about alternative strategies where perhaps you don't have to move the tenant. At this point, Alan, why don't you say hello and welcome to the show?
Howard, it's my privilege and honor to be with you this afternoon. I am delighted to make your digital acquaintance.
Well, you've already made my digital acquaintance, and Alan and I are a perfect example of how social media can be of benefit to anyone who actively and properly uses it. Alan, before we go on and talk about the specific subject matter of the show, why don't you give about a 30-second representation of what it is that you do and who you work with?
I appreciate that, Howard. In its simplest terms, I provide location advice to owners and occupants of industrial buildings in Southern California, with a company called Lee & Associates, which is shameless plug time, the seventh largest regional commercial real estate company in the United States.
Great group of guys over at Lee & Associates. We know quite a few of them, and quite a few actually listen to the show, partly through your efforts, Alan, and I must say that I appreciate it. We're going to talk a little bit later on in the show that I will be covering the Lee & Associates annual summit in Las Vegas next week, which is going to be quite an interesting affair. So, why don't we go on and start getting right into the topic? My first question for you, Alan, is when should a broker or a tenant first consider relocation?
The easiest answer is when they are approaching some sort of an event. And the event that we typically tie that to is an expiration of an existing lease. Of course, that assumes that they are leasing the space. If they're owning a space, then that could be a completely different set of circumstances. But the lease expiration is generally what triggers a company to make a real estate decision.
Now, before we get even in further into that, let's take, as a perfect example, a startup. So a company doesn't already have an existing lease, and they are now considering moving into space, and they may be considering, in your case, it's industrial or warehouse space, and they're looking to take on, for example, 20,000 to 25,000 square feet, and they're probably looking at a 5 or 10 year lease. When they start considering that first lease, isn't that a good time to consider relocating before the end of that lease, or at least consider their options?
Now, are we talking about the case where a company is a startup and they're looking for their very, very first location, or are we talking about a startup that already has a location?
Oh, a startup that does not have a location.
Okay. So what we typically see with a startup is largely they could be home-based, because maybe their business is derived from some sort of an e-commerce. As an example, my wife has a home-based business, and we have looked at the possibility of taking some of her equipment out of our garage and putting it into industrial unit of some sort. So yeah, that would be a case where a company would consider a location prior to a lease expiration, because obviously they don't have a lease expiration. They're occupying some sort of a home-based situation. And then to your first question relative to that first step, right, that first step into a building someplace, my goodness, myriad, probably spend the whole hour talking about that, myriad of issues that they should consider.
What are the things, when you're first considering moving into space, what are some of the things that a tenant should be thinking about in terms of their exit from the space?
Great question.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
No, I do. And you know, it's interesting to hear your legal mind at work, because your legal mind causes you to think about all sorts of things that us dumb brokers probably don't think about. However, no, that's the truth. However, if I'm looking at helping a company with their very first location, I am really zeroed in on, number one, why are you considering relocating at this time? Is there a cheaper way for you to continue your operation without leasing a space? And I know that sounds counterintuitive, but it's very critically important, because if I don't point that out and help a company realize that, they're going to figure it out from another service provider. Maybe it's a CPA or an attorney or an insurance broker that says, hey, have you considered this? When we started our company, we did that. So I think it's really important to have that kind of a conversation. But for a company that's locating in its first building, how big ultimately do you plan to be? What are the changes that are going to occur in, let's say, the first 2 years of your occupancy? Is the geography correct? What changes in terms of machinery, in terms of personnel, in terms of material handling, in terms of, you know, truck loading, orders, et cetera, are you going to anticipate? And all those need to be combined into a strategy of how that first location works. There's a physical aspect of that, and then, of course, is a technical deal aspect of that, where we're dealing with lease terms and options and termination rights, et cetera. So it is probably as important to do that planning well ahead of getting in the car and looking at alternatives than you can imagine.
I agree with you. Today we're discussing tenant relocation and alternative strategies with Alan Buchanan. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the lease terms and strategies that you could throw into a lease, or at least suggest, that'll give the tenant as much flexibility as possible.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockscre.com.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio. Via email to questions@creradio.com. Or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Glad to have you with us today. So let's talk about, and this is an area where I can particularly participate in, is what is it that you're looking for in the lease terms? Or let me make some suggestions. One of the things is, if you're going to sign a 10-year, I mean, you could always say you sign a 3-year lease, which gives you a lot of flexibility so that if you got to move in 3 years, you can do it. But what's the downside, an obvious downside of a 3-year lease?
Well, it strictly depends on the business, number one. I would say that if you're a retailer, the downside of signing a 3-year lease is you may find out that the location is the best ever and it's generating a tremendous amount of volume, and all of a sudden the 3 years is up, your landlord realizes you're generating all that business and he's going to try to raise your rent by threefold.
And correctly so.
Right. So for an industrial or an office user, probably less so, but you have the market forces that take place during that 3-year period of time. And let's just take hypothetically 2009. So if you had started a company in 2009, number one, you're a very brave soul, but number two, you would have been at the very trough in Southern California of the real estate market, specifically the leasing market. So if you were able to lock in a very long term, a 5 to 10 year term in 2009, you'd be benefiting today from a very, very low lease rate. And compared to what's happening in the market today, significantly below where you could go out and lease alternative space. The, of course, risk in that is if you're in startup mode and you're in growth mode, now all of a sudden you're locked into a term, you can't grow, the space doesn't work for you anymore, yet you're obligated to a term past the operational efficiency of that particular building.
Yeah, another factor to consider is how much money you're putting into the space to begin with. If you're spending a couple of $100,000 or more, you need a return on that investment. You may not be able to get it all out moving in 3 years, or at least being forced to move out in 3 years.
That's an accurate comment, and let's flip that around and say. And take it from the landlord, the owner's perspective, they've got the same concern. They're doing a fairly hefty build out for you and they have only a 3-year lease with which to recapture that cost, get some benefit from that cost.
So one of the things that you could do as a tenant and agree to as a landlord, although as a landlord I don't like these terms, you could always negotiate an option. So if the landlord wants a 10-year lease, maybe you can negotiate a 5-year lease with an option or more to renew for another 5 years or 10 years or whatever. Of course, then the problem becomes the issue of at what rate, correct?
Exactly. And like, let's use 2009 as an example, one of my favorite years because it was really transformational. Didn't kill me, made me stronger, right?
Right.
but you choose 2009, and to your point, I doubt you would have found a landlord even in those bleak times that would have been willing to grant a fixed rate option 5 or 10 years out, because even though everything was very dark and ugly, we hoped and prayed that it would get better within the 3 to 5 year horizon.
Sure.
So then what you have is you have an agreement to agree. You've got an option that says, okay, you're some percentage of market or you are a market rate option. And then really, what do you have? Do you have anything of, other than they're not going to kick you out, they have to negotiate with you? Do you really have anything of value at that point?
I agree. One of the things that I've been seeing from national tenants is rather than an option, that they will sign, particularly in retail, they'll sign a long-term lease with an early termination right that could be just a flat-out early termination right with perhaps a small buyout, or an early termination that is linked to occupancy in a center, etc. What are your thoughts on some of those provisions?
They work great, and it's interesting you brought that up. Our friend Nick for VP just sent me a tweet and actually had that as one of his points. Maybe you saw the same tweet. Anyway, the 10-year lease with an out provision works great for an occupant. Most owners are going to view that as the shortest period of time. So in other words, if you have signed a 10-year lease with an occupant and you have a termination after the 7th year, they're going to view that as a 7-year lease. So a couple of things, you know, come to pass. Number one, as a broker, we make our living selling space, leasing space over a term for an amount of money. Landlord's probably not going to pay you for that period of time. So let's say you can look past that issue, and now the landlord, now the occupant is looking at that 7-year term and saying, you know, is this really long enough for me to do what I need to do? And the landlord is looking at it saying, is this really long enough for me to spend the amount of money, give the amount of concessions, i.e. free rent, et cetera. So yes, it provides some flexibility, but both sides of that table look at that issue differently.
Well, there are also some peripheral issues that are, as it relates to that. The shorter the term, or if you have a early termination, it might affect your ability, the landlord's ability, to get financing, whether it be for the property or financing to do the TIs.
Yes, indeed. And I have run into that many, many times. Actually ran into that with a deal we did with Kilroy Realty when they still owned some industrial property in Southern California. And we had a rather large concern. It was had all of the issues pertinent to a relocation. Is the space going to work for us? We really would like to build in some flexibility in the out years, yet we realize it's the bottom of the market and we'd like to lock this thing in for as long as we possibly can. And what we settled on was they wanted to do a 10-year term, but we settled on a 7 with a 5-year option, and that really solved it for them and was able to satisfy both landlord and tenant.
So we're going to take a break right now and listen to a few words from our beloved sponsors. So why don't you stay with us? And when we come back, I'm going to just kind of throw out a couple of other lease considerations that you may want to pay attention to in order to preserve as much flexibility for yourself as a tenant.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. Thanks for being with us today. I'm here with Alan Buchanan, and we're talking about tenant relocation and other alternatives. I want to remind everybody that a little bit later in the show, in about 40 minutes, Simon Walker from Raymond Hanley is going to be joining us, talking about some of the alternatives. So what I'd like to do during this portion of the show is We've talked about options, and the things that you really have to pay attention to is the kind of businesses that have typical expansion or contraction. Certainly a startup would be. But in my experience, law firms, ad agencies, are really have always been very typical of great expansion and then contraction, depending upon gaining or losing a particular client. Some of the other provisions that you should be paying attention to are use provisions and the ability to sublease or assign the space. Sometimes, of course, if you need to move out, if you have a very restrictive sublease or assignment provision, it can prevent you from easily exiting the space. So negotiating that up front may not seem to make sense to the uninitiated, but for those like Alan who are experienced in the tail end, you really have to pay attention to. And I believe coupled with the assignment or sublease provision is a use provision. Sometimes the use provisions that the landlords put into their leases are so narrow that although you have the right to sublease and assign, you are very limited to subleasing or assigning to only certain types of businesses. And of course, that could be a problem. And then there are also sublease and assignment provisions that relate to acquisition, and particularly relating to retail. You deal with, and you see quite a lot of these go dark provisions, because retail space, even if the tenant's paying rent but the space is empty, it hurts the center. So, Alan, let's get to the real meat and potatoes of this show, now that it's taken so long and everybody had to listen to me. Let's talk about... And you're on the show, so, I mean, you could hang up, but it's kind of difficult. Let's talk about, the relocations that occur mid-lease. And you've indicated to me that in your experience, these are the relocations that you see most often. So why don't you give us some examples of what you've experienced?
I would say the best example of a, let's call it a mid-lease relocation, would occur in a case of a merger or an acquisition. And that would be where obviously a company's bought or sold, and taking the example of a manufacturing company in Orange, California, all of a sudden they get acquired by a company in Portland, Oregon. And the company in Portland, Oregon looks at the operation in Orange, California, and guess what? They've got a location in Anaheim, California, which for those of you not in SoCal, that's about 10 minutes away. They look and say, wow, we've got a location in Anaheim, a location in Orange, and we've got basically these two companies doing the same thing for a living in duplicate facilities. So in that case, it might actually be cheaper for a company to shutter one of its two locations, even though term remains on the lease, shutter one of the locations and move that operation into another building. I've also seen that happen where both facilities, let's say, have a different function, and the facilities are combined under one roof because it becomes more efficient to operate under one roof than to have two facilities doing, in effect, a slightly different thing. So that's probably the best case of a midterm relocation and what would cause that.
You've also have your list of five causative factors. Why don't you go through them?
Happy to. So I authored a blog post called Five Reasons Why Companies Relocate. Those can be found at alancbuchanan.blogspot.com. That's my location advice blog. But the five reasons that I see most often are: a company is going to relocate to affect a rent savings. We saw an awful lot of this occur in 2009 and 2010, where leases were rolling over from leases that were created in 5, 6, and 7. They have a chance to own the building. See that happen quite a bit. They have a chance to seek a better location or building. They either do an upsize or a downsize. We just talked through the most common case of an up or downsize, and that would be through a merger or acquisition. And last but not least, achieving a better efficiency. One of the things that we see on the last point is as a company starts to grow, what they do is they consume space around them. Now, if they're in a, let's call it an incubator space in 5 or 10,000 square feet, there's a space right next door that the landlord owns that they can expand into. They do that because it's quick and easy. All of a sudden, they need more space. They look, and the landlord doesn't have any. They look across the parking lot. Bingo, there's some space. Let's grab it. So now, all of a sudden, you got this inefficient mess. You have three different rooftops, three different office layouts, three different sets of management and phones, et cetera. So I frequently see companies relocate to create a better efficiency. Occupy one building under one roof and eliminate all the fluff.
Now, let's talk about a better location or facility. You talked about better efficiency. We were considering also supply chain considerations. What about e-commerce? How has e-commerce affected those considerations that you've been dealing with over the last 2 or 3 years?
It's interesting that you mentioned that. We talk about that quite frequently in our industrial meetings, and I right now have a company that is an Amazon fulfillment and eBay fulfillment company. It's interesting because they are subleasing a piece of a 100,000 square foot building, and through a series of circumstances, the 100,000 square foot tenant is relocating, and this particular Amazon e-fulfillment operation is not going to move with the mothership. He's going to move into another building. E-commerce fulfillment operations have to be close to their ultimate shipping point. That's really the value that they bring to the company that they're shipping for, be it an Amazon, an eBay, or whomever. So the proximity to rooftops is pretty critically important. In this gentleman's case, he needs a main boulevard frontage as well, because he's going to be doing a little bit of retailing out of the front and do the fulfillment out of the back. So definitely some considerations. And for us in the industrial world, that's kind of a new thing. I mean, it's been coming to be for the last few years, but we're really starting to see quite a bit of an activity in that particular business type.
Oh, that you know, you, this is something that we hadn't previously considered as part of the show, but I'm going to throw you some curveballs on this.
hopefully you're not like my man Zach Granke. You can actually get someone out.
No, I've got, because I want to talk about this e-commerce, because we've had a previous radio show talking about fulfillment and distribution centers and how the e-tailers are starting to look to same day delivery, and I had some theories about what made sense, including creating these campuses of industrial buildings that also do some retail, but most of the space is used for fulfillment. But we'll talk about that as soon as we come back after these breaks.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to prospectnow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's prospectnow.com.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Block CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Block CRE is the best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more, easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockscre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Block CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. Log on to blockscre.com.
For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CRE Radio. via email to questions@creradio.com or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
We're discussing tenant relocation and alternative strategies. Welcome back to the show. We're going to make a slight detour right now. Simon Walker, who's going to be joining us on the show, he's got a little bit of a time constraint. So I'd like to talk about some of those alternatives. Simon, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, surprised, huh?
Well, hey, Simon, how are you, man?
Hi, Alan.
It is wonderful to have you on the show, Simon. Simon, why don't you take about 30 seconds and describe what you do and who you work for.
Okay, sure. So I'm Vice President of Sales for Raymond Handling Concepts, and we are the distributor of the Raymond brand of electric lift trucks. Raymond Corporation was founded back after the First World War by its founder, George Raymond, who bought a small agricultural equipment manufacturer and invented the first hand pallet truck and the pallet to go along with it. And as a result, really invented the industry of materials handling by saving labor, because prior to the invention of the hand pallet truck, of course, people would move product hand to hand down a line. And with the hand pallet truck, now one person with a machine is able to do the work of 100.
Now, let me interrupt you a second now, Simon. Now, you deal with more than just pallets. Let me ask you this question. What if the tenant is out of space and they can't or they don't want to move? How do you get involved? And what is it? What are some solutions that you've come up with?
Well, that's right. So Raymond Handling Concepts really is able to help maximize the space in a warehouse. And what Raymond Handling Concepts, someone at Raymond Handling Concepts can do is analyze the space that the tenant is already in and look for alternatives in terms of increasing storage density or also increasing the productivity of the warehouse. One of the ways to do that is by narrowing the aisles. There are three standard aisles that are used, from a wide aisle to a narrow aisle, or from a narrow aisle to a very narrow aisle, each time increasing the storage capacity of the warehouse by 33%. The trade-off, of course, is greater investment in materials handling equipment, racking, conveyor, other types of materials handling equipment that reduces the amount of labor, but also increases the storage capacity and productivity of that distribution center.
One of the things that we talked about was that sometimes you deal not just in relocations, but when a tenant is looking for what they believe is 2,000 square feet, and you could, if you get involved, you can actually figure out how they can accomplish what they want to accomplish in 100,000 square feet. Do you have any examples of how and when you did that?
Yeah, there's a Chinese condiment manufacturer here on the West Coast that was looking. They knew they were out of space. They knew that they had a growth plan that exceeded the size of the space that they currently had, and they were in multiple facilities, just as Alan was discussing earlier. So we sat down with the client, and we did an analysis of looking at the number of SKUs that they were producing, the number of pallets that they anticipated to have within their warehouse, and of course, what it was for now and also for the future. By doing that analysis and doing Pareto's Law, a discovery around their product and their product handling needs, we were able to give them three different options, for the warehouse space that they were looking for. The key feature for the new warehouse space that they were looking for was that the warehouse space, no matter where it was, it had to be within 7 to 12 miles of a rail spur. It also had to be within that distance to their manufacturing facility, which they didn't want to move. So by looking at these three different scenarios, of course, at each scenario with denser and denser storage systems, the investment into the materials handling system increases. However, their options from a commercial real estate point of view increased. So whereas they thought they might need a 300,000 square foot facility, we were able to give them an investment opportunity in materials handling that allowed them to also consider a 200,000 square foot facility as well as a 150,000 square foot facility. And as a result, their options from a commercial real estate point of view increased exponentially, and they were able to consider many more buildings.
And if I can interject, Howard, if you've got brokers listening to this and they're scratching their head and saying, why on earth would I try to convince a company to lease less square footage when I get paid based upon the amount of square footage I lease? Simon and I have had this conversation, and here's the reason. Number one, you want to do what's best for your client. We all understand that. But number two, in our Southern California market in particular, we are very, very short on big boxes. So this particular tenant that Simon's describing didn't have any alternatives in the size range that they, quote unquote, thought they needed. So by rearranging the material, and by the way, no brokerage fee to be earned there because no building to put them in. When Simon did his analysis and discovered that, you can occupy 150 or 200,000 square feet, now all of a sudden there are five alternatives. And guess what? Now we're able to make a real estate transaction and earn a fee and solve the client's problem at the same time. Client loves it because they lease less square footage, thus less rent goes out the door. Raymond loves it because they get to sell some material handling equipment. Broker loves it because they make a real estate fee. So everyone wins.
A win-win situation. Well, Alan, why don't you, you had indicated to me that you worked with Alan on one project where some new equipment, the tenant was getting some new equipment coming in, and you needed an extra 5,000 square feet and there wasn't any room there. How did you and Simon handle that?
Well, we did it, and let me take a step back, because the important thing to know there, and the brokers in your audience will relate to this. So this particular company owns a building. It's about a 30,000 square foot building. They're in the manufacturing business. They've owned the building for about 10, 15 years. They had four new machines that were coming in the door and didn't know what to do about it. They really didn't want to move because they had very heavy investment in power distribution. They'd owned the building a while. Their occupancy costs were low as a result of that, but they were out of room. So we had to look at an alternative for them that would allow them to stay put in their existing building, but by the same token, be able to expand their machinery operation. I would not have gotten to talk to this company, get face-to-face with them, if I purely was trying to talk to them about the real estate, because once again, they didn't really believe they had a real estate requirement. They thought they had a space issue. And so by talking to them about a creative way to solve the space issue, I was able to be introduced to the client. We were able to have a couple of meetings, and we believe that we've got their space issue solved, which is taking roughly 10,000 square feet of low bay storage space and doing a creative, I believe that the situation is called a Remstar system, Simon.
Mm-hmm.
It actually stacks the material so that the less used material is in at the top. In fact, it takes about 10,000 square feet and reduces it to about 1,000 square feet. So the client freed up 9,000 feet of space.
And when we come back, Simon, I'd like you to explain what that Remstar system was and a little bit of the specifics of that solution that you came up with.
Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. TECH, that's the tech. NIQUES, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to our discussion about tenant relocation. And when we had left just before the break, we were talking about Remstar. So tell us about your solution, Simon.
Well, yeah, you know, a couple of examples come to mind. One thing is Alan and I work very well together because Alan is always looking for creative ways to help his clients find different solutions that may be a little bit out of the ordinary, out of the box thinking. And one of the really neat products out there that we're the distributor for is the Cardex Remstar. Cardex Remstar is a manufacturer of horizontal carousels and vertical lift modules, among other things. What those are storage and picking media. So if you ever go to a dry cleaner and you see the clothes on hangers and it's going around a rail on a carousel, it's kind of like that. It's either wire shelves that are hanging from a rail and go round and round in an oval that brings the pick to the picker, or in another situation, a cabinet which a tray comes down to a counter and rolls out, and you're able to pick off of a tray, and then the tray goes back in up a dumbwaiter and back into storage. With one customer that was a manufacturer of cosmetics, what they had a challenge with was that they were tied in a building, they were doing manufacturing. It was expensive to move their manufacturing facility, but they were looking for greater storage space, and they wanted the product that they were using for manufacturing at the point of use, very close to the point of use. So by introducing this thing called a vertical lift module, we call it a VLM, they were able to reduce the amount of floor space that they otherwise would have used using steel shelving by 90%. So literally, with an investment into this cabinet, this VLM, they were able to take 90% of, or 100% of their product and squeeze it down into a 10% footprint. And of course, then they used the full height of their building. And in some cases, some of our clients have even put a hole through the roof and put a bonnet on it and gone 40 feet in the air. So it's a tremendous opportunity to save floor space, stay in the building, work with your broker to renegotiate the lease for the building that you're already in, and also increase the storage capacity of that building.
The other thing I would add to that is, in once again in a market like we're in here, where there's a real shortage of good industrial alternatives, if you can and expand that potential to a few more buildings that a client can consider because they're, you know, slightly smaller, but through this creative use of material handling, you expand your chances of making a real estate deal.
Hmm. Wow. That's pretty impressive. Now, I'd like to talk to you at a later time. Simon, were you about to say something?
I just wanted to say there's one other benefit, and it's worth mentioning, and that is you really increase the amount of labor efficiency. You reduce the amount of labor. And, of course, with real estate, you're always also considering parking spaces and that sort of thing. So if any time you can reduce the amount of labor in your building, not only do you save money because 72% of the cost of running a distribution center is labor, but you're also able to now make that building work because fewer people now need to park their cars outside.
We just had on that very point, we have a client of ours who's the front of their building, so consequently half of their parking lot was taken by eminent domain because they're taking the road underneath the railroad tracks, which abuts the building. And as a result of that, they lost 15 parking spaces. Very employee intense. And we used this kind of a system to help them with their material handling. And as a result of that, the building now works for a little bit longer. And once again, for the brokers in your audience, you may be saying, well, gee, okay, how do I make any money doing that? Well, you know, that's a fair question. But if you're in the commercial business for a year, there's probably nothing in that for you. But if you plan to make your career out of selling commercial real estate, pay it forward, that's going to come back to you. Maybe Simon Walker bumps into someone that he would love to refer to you, but that client's going to definitely remember that you put their interest ahead of your own.
Well,
yeah, that's right. And then 42% of our, you know, of the industry that we do very well in use our product. So just imagine almost half of the warehouses out there using our product. We now have a relationship that we, of course, can introduce Alan to and brokers like Alan.
Well, we're going to, Alan and I are going to talk about that issue a little bit. And while I admire his concept of paying it forward, I think that, you know, when you're providing consulting services, there needs to be some perhaps more direct motivation for the broker. And I think that there can be. With that being said, I also think that if you're looking to move, if the tenant needs to move anyhow, having someone like Simon can actually help make a deal, because you can get your tenant in a smaller space. So there's huge advantage for a broker to work with someone like Simon. And I think that that there's great advantage in that alone. So, now I'd like to take a few moments to hear a few words from the good people who pay all the bills around here. And when we come back, before we leave Simon, I'd like to thank you. And when we come back, we will be talking a little bit about the kind of questions that a tenant should be asking the broker about a move.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces, or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com, on Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
And welcome back to our discussion about tenant relocation. And we're here with Alan Buchanan. So, Alan, now let's deal with the issue of, do the tenants always know what questions to ask? And if not, what should they be asking you?
I would say that tenants fall into a couple of categories. The sophisticated tenant, and that would be maybe a corporate occupant that has a number of locations around the United States, maybe a number of locations within a market. Maybe they have an in-house real estate department that actually manages that process for them. In that case, absolutely, they're gonna know the questions to ask. The pretty typical mom and pop, close closely held company that I find myself dealing with. And by the way, mom and pop doesn't mean they're small in volume or small in square footage. Some of the largest companies in my marketplace, candidly, are closely held corporations. But I find that they generally don't know the sorts of questions that they should be asking. And so, candidly, my advice is much more needed in that particular situation than with maybe a corporate occupant with 100 locations around the United States.
Okay. Now, what questions do you generally ask?
First question I ask is why they're considering a move, because their answer to that question can be very illuminating. I like to see them relocating for, let's call them, the right reasons, because if a company is relocating for, quote-unquote, the wrong reasons, that generally is going to come into play at some point in your transaction, and it might actually cause the transaction to not happen. So that's first and foremost. The second thing I like to ask is, where does decision maker, the owner of the company, live? Because one of the first rules of thumb that I learned way back when, middle of the 80s, was, you know, the company typically will locate close to where the boss lives. And you start looking at closely all companies, and I bet you 90% of the time that's the case. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, when I did tenant rep in New York City, that was the first and foremost question, is where did the CEO or the main decision makers, where did they live? You're going to be looking for space for them, unless they had some other overriding decision to be, for instance, in the fashion district or in, you know, downtown near Wall Street or something like that. I wonder if the younger brokers understand that now.
I hope they do, as a result of listening to this show either now or on podcast, because it's a really, really important question to ask. And you know, I talked about the corporate user. We're working with one right now, and there's a local operator, if you will, a national company. And the national company is based in Kansas City, Missouri, and the local operations in Orange, California. So it's curious that where that local operator lives is sort of driving the real estate decision, to the point where the best alternative for this company isn't close to where this guy lives, but he's persuading the big mothership to look at a location that's closer to his home, which may not be the best alternative all around. So if you're not asking that first or second, please do ask that first or second. And then maybe third or fourth on my list would be, where are your customers? Because that'll tell me an awful lot about where to locate a company. Where your employees live, that comes up quite frequently in preliminary conversations, because if I've got a key employee or two that a move 15, 20 minutes east, west, north, or south is going to cause them to reconsider working for me, that could have some devastating effect on my operation. So those would be my top four questions.
While it's an emotional decision to move and where you move to, it is a lot about numbers. And am I correct in suggesting that you really dig deep to try to evaluate what the cost would be for staying in the space? Even if you use someone like Simon, there's going to be a cost to that equipment, and you will look at the pros and cons in terms of costs and balance that for the tenant, correct?
That's correct. And once again, the reason that I do that is because I'm a big believer in a lifetime client. And if I meet someone today, I'd love for them to be a client for the next 20 years. And if I give them the wrong advice today that's self-serving, they're not going to be my client in 20 years. They're going to be someone else's client. So I would rather be candid, assess the situation, figure out the right solution, even if that solution is not a relocation today. Maybe the client hasn't even thought of the solution that I proposed, but it saves them a fair amount of money as a result. Well, guess what? The next time around, I'm not going to have any competition. The next time they're at a cocktail party and their neighbor says, oh, by the way, I'm looking for a building. Well, hey, you got to call my friend Alan Buchanan because, listen, here's what he did for me, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the sort of pay it forward service that I like to be known for.
But haven't you lost deals because you were honest with the tenant?
Absolutely. I absolutely have. But it's the whole universal reciprocity rule. I just believe that if you're candid with your clients, if you help them find the right solution, A, you're going to feel better as a human being, but B, the money is going to come your way. It just is because you're waking up every day doing the right thing.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. We'll return with more from Alan Buchanan right after these messages.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's ProspectNow.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at CREradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
And we are back discussing tenant relocation and alternative strategy with Alan Buchanan. So, Alan, now I get to throw you that little curveball. And it's not really much of a curveball. It's kind of a soft curveball, if I may. There's been a lot of conversation about multi-channel retail, and most of it I have been hearing from the brick-and-mortar side. Brick-and-mortar has got to come up with the experience and incorporate e-tailing into its business. And of course, we're seeing more and more of this happening. But recently, I've been hearing how the e-tailers are looking to improve their customer experience, including same-day delivery, etc. And I've had some conversations where, if I can try to draw this picture, where retailing could shift to lesser expensive industrial / warehouse property. And instead of it being strictly retail, it's really more of a campus style, like a group of 4, 5, 6 buildings, large warehouse industrial buildings that also have frontage that is retail. Kind of a hybrid between fulfillment and outlet.
There's a furniture retailer in Southern California, and Howard, you probably know it. It's called Living Spaces. Living Spaces came on the scene in 2006, I believe, frankly, at the peak of the housing boom in Southern California. But their concept was buy it today and it's in your home tonight. Literally, if you walked into their showroom and you bought a sectional today and you bought it before 4 p.m., that sectional was in your house that evening. Phenomenal. They have just absolutely cratered a lot of the smaller furniture retailers in Southern California. And last count, I believe, Living Space is up to maybe 10 or 15 locations in and around our area. That despite the housing downturn between 2009 and 2011. So there's great Barrett in being able to touch it, see it, yet own it and buy it and have it in your house today. The other thoughts that I have are you run into a basic issue from the standpoint of zoning, from the standpoint of parking ratio, from the standpoint of infrastructure, maybe ADA issues, when you try to convert Main Street frontage industrial product to a product where folks are arriving and buying things. So I like the idea, and I mentioned this other company I'm dealing with, that's the Amazon fulfillment company. That's what he's looking for. He wants to do some retailing out of the front and do the fulfillment out of the back. So, and you know, candidly, there are quite a few of those available because he can move into an old grocery store location that's been dark for a couple of years or what have you. So I believe it's a concept that's here to stay.
Yeah, I wish I could draw it out. I don't know if I described it, but your discussion about the Amazon fulfiller all of a sudden triggered that whole concept in my mind. And let me tell you really partly where that idea came from. In the early 80s, I moved back to New York, and I was living in New York City. And my parents said, you got to go to this outlet center. Hadn't even heard of an outlet center. What are you talking about? And we went out from New York City to some place in New Jersey, you know, Hoboken or wherever. And we went to this warehouse industrial area. And there was it was an industrial park for some large retailer. Might have been, who knows. I remember I went shopping for pants and coats and shoes and stuff like that. Just like the outlet stores, except this was really part of their warehouse distribution center. And they had this little storefront where you can buy seconds. And while I haven't seen that too much because outlets now have become more retail, it's something that back because the real estate is much less expensive than retail.
We have that very situation in one of our industrial areas. This company, and we actually did the transaction a few years ago, but the company actually warehouses and distributes bulk coffee and tea products. And as an offshoot of that business, they have a little coffee shop on premise. Now, if you can picture a dock high distribution building of about 70,000 square feet, so you've got a ground level office space and then you've got a mezzanine office space, they've actually created the coffee house in the mezzanine office space. So you know, you're up the stairs and it's kind of techy and cool looking, and you can sample the coffees and teas right there. And so that's exactly what you're talking about.
Hershey, Pennsylvania started out that way. And Wonder Bread. Not that we see Wonder Bread anymore, but Wonder Bread. You could go to their warehouse distribution facilities, and they always had a retail store right in the front.
Some of these cities, and in particular, North Orange County, California cities, Fullerton and Orange is an example, both have what they call the commercial manufacturing zone. And that zone is geared specifically for the kind of use that you're describing. Now, up until now, it hasn't terribly well taken hold because the trade doesn't typically think of doing both. But the city's vision for that zone is I'm making something in the back or assembling something in the back and I'm selling it through the front.
Mm. Well, we'll see. We'll see if I'm a bit of a soothsayer and it will actually happen. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we actually call Christian, who's got a question.
If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. Large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's L-O-G-O-S, the number 2, then L-I-F-E.com. Logostolife.com. Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. T-E-C-H, that's the tech. N-I-Q-U-E-S, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@creradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
And welcome back to the last section of our radio show. I'm here with Alan Buchanan, and we have a caller, Christian. He's with Schultz Properties. Christian, you have a question.
Yes, good afternoon. This is an older question, I'm sure, because I was on the phone call, unfortunately, during your show. But I represented a dentist once recently that was going to a retail center, and he actually requested us put in the proposal that after a certain percentage of the center, if it became, you know, vacant, that he would be able to get out of his lease or force a reduction in his rent. I'm based out of Chicago here, and the landlord basically scratched that right away. You brought that up earlier. Is that something that's starting to take hold elsewhere in the country that any of you have noticed? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Particularly in, I see it primarily in retail. I don't know where else.
Right, this was a retail center.
Yeah, I get to see that primarily from national tenants who have the negotiating strength to demand something like that. I've seen it quite often recently, particularly the bigger retail tenants. Not just okay. In terms of national, but the larger they are in terms of the size of the space or the percentage of the center. It's, I've seen if a certain percentage or certain other tenants moved out or situations okay. Where they could terminate. I've seen it where national tenants will go, particularly in shopping centers, where the supermarket may move out, that will occur. That, in since about 2008, has caused major problems for a lot of owners of shopping centers because it's a house of falling cards. Difficult situation if you want the national tenants, and often you've got to work something out, and that requires some very skillful negotiations, and you have to be very careful with what those triggering events are. You have any other questions?
Yeah, that's a great question, and you know, I've been doing this since 1984, primarily industrial, and I have never heard of that issue before, so I'm really happy you brought that to my attention. You know, it sort of speaks to this whole issue of specialization, and if you don't have a retail specialist helping you with your retail requirement or an industrial specialist with your industrial requirement or office, et cetera, you're probably doing yourself as an occupant, you're probably doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah.
True, I understand. And one other thing, have you guys talked about the microbreweries going into the industrial space where, I know in Chicago we're getting that a lot, where the back end is the brewery and the front end is basically a small little bar, and you're able to go in there and have drinks and stuff, but they don't serve food, but they do bring food trucks out like every weekend.
That's probably a great idea.
We've got some microbreweries here, started to see a little bit of that pop up in Southern California as well, not with the bar in the front or the tasting room in the front, but certainly the brewery in the back. We have some pretty strict zoning, and I just can't even imagine trying to get something like that approved in our lovely state. Howard, can you?
I would think that would be a little difficult, but it is very similar to Kilo or Napa, where it's almost like it'd be a beer tasting room versus a wine tasting room.
Right, but the difference is, of course, they grow the grapes in Temecula. Now, if we had you know, barley and hops that grew in Fullerton, and you
could
get that, right?
Yeah, and I frankly, if I went to a beer tasting room, I wouldn't be spitting out the beer.
Exactly, right. And you demand that it be delivered to you in a tanker, not a shot glass.
Well, you need to come to Chicago then, because we have those breweries all over the place.
Actually, Christian, I'm going to be in Chicago at the SIOR World Conference in 2 weeks. I'm going to be there. So if you can, you ought to come to the conference. It's a big conference to go to, and I'll be looking for you so I can get some beer.
I'll definitely I'll let you know, and we'll find the nearest industrial park that has one.
I don't need an industrial park. Just bring me a beer.
Howard is a shy guy that'll be sitting over in the corner, by the way.
Yeah. I am shy, actually. Well, Christian, thank you very much, and thank you for calling in. So, Alan, let's kind of wrap this up, and I won't give you a lecture now about how you need to convert some of your great consulting prowess. And I mean that. You can pay it forward and still get a reasonable value for what you're doing. Unfortunately, what I'm doing is I'm really good at lecturing someone else for the same dumb things that I do. And I don't take my own advice, but it's easier for me to lecture you than it is myself. So let's talk about Alan.
Hey, by the way, real quick, I just got a tweet from gentleman, and he said that he's been to a number of craft breweries in Fullerton, California that have tasting rooms. So, hey, I stand corrected. I know there's a pretty good one called Bootleggers, I believe is the name of it. And maybe that's one of the ones that your listener is referring to. But it's kind of cool to see that there are actually folks out there listening. So that's neat.
Yeah.
So you wanted to talk about how to monetize some of these consulting things, right?
Yes, yeah. But we're not going to be doing that now. That's going to be my personal campaign with you, and so that we can generate some more money for you. Not that you need it, but you know, I know that it's important to make your wife happy, not you. So
a personal campaign that we can take up next week, right?
Yes, yes. We'll over a beer. Alan has been very kind to get me involved at the Leon and Associates Summit. So I want to thank Alan for being so instrumental in helping me out in that way. Alan, why don't you tell everybody how to get in touch with you?
Thanks for that opportunity. Sure. Alan Buchanan, and it's spelled A-L-L-E-N. My direct phone number here at Lee & Associates in Orange, California is 714-564-7104. Email is abuchanan, B-U-C-H-A-N-A-N, at lee-associates.com. And my blog is alancbuchanan.blogspot.com. And there are links to my Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. And I do, in fact, respond to Twitter shout-outs and such. So I would love to connect with you on Twitter. I'd love it if you follow my blog. And you want to just give me a call and say, gosh, you did a stellar job on CRE Radio. That'd be okay, too.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, Alan, if there was one thing that you think that a listener should take away from this show, what would that one thing be?
Consult your occupants. Don't just jump to the conclusion that they need to move. Consult your occupants. Help them find the right solution.
That's great advice. We are going to be, gosh, I'm going to be gallivanting all over the place coming shows. We have a special show. Gene Trowbridge, who is nationally renowned for his advice on syndications, he's going to be on the air talking about the new crowdfunding legislation on the Jobs Act. And we're going to dig pretty deep into that, and it really explain to everybody what is really available, what makes sense, what has changed, and really what has not changed. Not only that, what are going to be pitfalls that Gene and I believe that people are going to fall into. So we're going to be working on that. Next Friday, I got Bo Barron, the one who saved my bacon. Bo is going to be on the air. We're going to be talking about what he refers to as the three P's that has to do with prospecting. I'm not sure what the other two P's are, but we're going to get into that. We've got a show coming up November 1st. I am really excited about this. We've got David Head. He's going to be one of our icons of real estate. And this show is going to be really, it's not going to be about numbers. It's not going to be so much about what he did to become the success that he is, but it's going to be probably more about what made him the person that he is, the experience, and how he became such a great leader in commercial real estate. I'm also going to be at the Lee & Associates Summit in Las Vegas next week. The following week, I'm going to be in Chicago at our conference. And then in November, I'm going to be at the ULI National Conference in San Francisco. So I would now like to thank Alan. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Howard. It was a delight, and I'd just like to quickly mention I'm also one of the speakers next week at the Lee & Associates Summit. I'm giving a talk called How I Survived the Crash of 2008 and Why You Should Care. So any Lee guys out there, I'd love to see you at the summit.
And you can leave comments and see show notes. As a matter of fact, you can also leave show notes at creradio.com/tenant relocations. And as always, thanks for listening.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com. Or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CRE Radio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.